OYOTU.com.
Sign Language with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 135 of Sign Language, and apologies for the, what's it been, 5 weeks? Thereabouts since the last episode. Just one of those cases of sidetracked by other things and didn't have a lot of compelling stuff that I felt was podcast worthy. But in the in that period, I've received not one but two emails from Rob Bettler with a couple of interesting points. So we'll start with the first one. Disclaimer: the content of this email may or may not be read on air, depending on how crappy it is judged to be. Note one. Now let's talk about audio quality. An army of donkeys led by a lion is better than an army of lions led by a donkey. Alexander the Great. Here's the twist. As an audio producer, you are the lion producer, and your hardware and software are your army. But unlike Alexander, you, meaning me, Bruce, need two lions to lead your army. Lion number one, content quality. Lion number two, audio quality. Without your two lions, your army of donkeys will never conquer the territory, which happens to be your audience. Some are troll donkeys too, but that's another story. The opposite of this is the audio producer with donkey content and donkey quality with a lion army of hardware and software. Dude, I'm just going to jump in and say, I think I have lion hardware and software as well. But let's not go down that track. Anyway, this kind of producer is a donkey because he can have the absolute best hardware and software, but will not know how to use them because he's a donkey to begin with. The audience will not be conquered by a donkey producer. And then he's inserted a link to the Wikipedia article for Adam Curry. I kid you not. Note number two. As many have, I've also noticed the market is constantly moving toward more processing power and more definition in audio and video, and it appears the boundaries of what is quote-unquote worth paying for have stopped at Surround Sound 22.2. And again, a link to the Wikipedia article on 22.2 channel surround sound. Now, I have to confess, I didn't even realize that the game had got this silly. 22.2 channels, to me, sounds like complete and utter overkill. If you haven't read up on it, then by all means, follow the link, check it out. The list of channels is there on the Wikipedia page, along with accompanying diagram to show you where all the speakers go in the room. Essentially, you've got a matrix of three layers. It's just crazy. Anyway, I'm not going to go down that path either, Rob, but thank you for the link. It's just bewildering to think that people are bothering with that many speakers. Like, I cannot believe that anybody in their right mind in their own home is going to go and invest in a system with 22 speakers and two subwoofers. I mean, the two subwoofers, yeah, I get that. Even though I think it's redundant, I don't think it's necessary because the human ear is not particularly sensitive to direction with low frequencies. So I personally believe a single subwoofer is enough. But, you know, there's always going to be people out there who think that two's better than one and will go and buy two subwoofers rather than just have the single one. But the 22 speakers, yeah, no, I'm sorry. I guess there will be people with more dollars than cents who will, you know, go out and do it. But I, for one, will not be in that camp. Even if I had the money, I don't think I'd be in that camp. Anyway, this logically leads us on to the link to the Wikipedia article for ultra high definition television. The result: 8K TV plus 22.2 channel surround combo. Here's the problem I have with this combo. They keep upping the ante with video, but not with audio. This 8K plus 22.2 combo seems to be a replacement for cinema, as people progressively buy their own cinema at home and have fewer reasons to bother to go to the theatre. I don't even think cinemas are up to the level of 22 channels. not that I know of. I certainly don't think any of the cinemas that I've been to here in Australia have gone quite that overboard, but hey, maybe there are cinemas around that do. As for the industry not upping the ante with audio, yeah, hard to say. Certainly in the production environment, we've now moved to, you know, well, in some spheres, 192K sample rates and, you know, 24 or 32-bit audio. Personally, I think that is probably high enough because that effectively gives you, you know, before aliasing, a complete bandwidth of 96 kilohertz. And as we know, it's, you know, argued that the human hearing system is, you know, pretty good for 20 hertz to 20K, right? But that's really only appropriate at the time of your birth, and pretty much from the moment you're exposed to industrial noise, your hearing starts to decline, you know, and certainly when you hit your teenage years and you start listening to music louder and louder, then you start killing off the little follicles on the cochlea even quicker, and, you know, and then, you know, once you get to my age, you're sort of in your mid-40s, then you're starting to, you know, lose some top end, just because of age, if not, you know, from environmental factors. But as I said, you know, this is primarily in the production workflow arena. You're not seeing a lot of 192K audio actually being delivered to consumers at this point. Last year, we saw Universal Music Group release high-fidelity pure audio, and they're releasing Blu-ray pure audio discs now. Fairly limited catalogue of you know, titles, or at least so I've seen. But again, most of them are coming out at 24-bit 96K. Some are 24-192. And they also have the option to encode the audio on those discs in Dolby True HD, which is a lossless form of encoding, you know, where the regular encoding the Blu-ray discs use is essentially like an MP3 type, or MP3, sorry, not MP3, MP3 type of encoding, which is lossy. So, yeah, you know, this some moves afoot, Rob, to bring higher sample rates to the consumer, but not a lot. I think the issue is that, you know, because, I mean, we've seen DVD-A and SACD, both before the Blu-ray Pure Audio format hit the market. So we've now essentially got three Blu-ray-style, you know, supposedly high-quality, you know, audio file disc formats, you know, that have either come and gone or have just arrived. I think the biggest issue is just getting consumer take-up, you know, and the thing is that at the same time, you've got a generation of kids who are growing up with MP3, listening on the crappiest of earbuds that ship with their iPhone, who think that that's how music should sound, you know, and they don't really care about high-quality audio. You know, I mean, God, we've been having this discussion for years and years and years about, you know, the loudness wars and how that's impacted, you know, MP3 encoding, and we could go on and on and on, couldn't we? Anyway, I shall keep reading Rob's email. Then it hit me. This is an arms race, Bruce, and audio is being left behind. Insert conspiracy crackpot Alex Jones tone here. Sorry, I have no idea who Alex Jones is, and therefore I cannot mimic his tone. I'm guessing maybe American? I don't know. I have no idea. I couldn't be bothered looking it up. Anyway, but 8K plus 22.2 may not win after all. Why, out of the blue, this came out and seems to give 8K a run for its money. He's given me the Wikipedia link to Oculus Rift. Yeah, I'm not sure I see the correlation there, Rob. Oculus Rift is designed to be a gaming headset, and the resolution is only 1280 by 800. which is around about 640 by 800 for each eye, approximately. It's actually a little bit more because there's some overlap between the eyes. But yeah, look, you know, Rob goes on to say that, you know, he doubts that he will be in the camp that wants to wear headsets. And I absolutely agree. I have no interest in wearing a headset. I honestly think, you know, the whole the video resolution thing, I don't know where that's going to end. I did see something through the week about, you know, the resolution required for a still image to match the supposed resolution of the human eye. And allegedly, I don't know how they came by this figure, but they came up with 576 megapixels. Right now, when you think that the, you know, the top end 35mm DSLRs today are shooting at 36 megapixels, and you know your really stupidly expensive large format digital SLRs like your Hasselblads and whatever are shooting at, I think the largest sensor I've heard of is 150 megapixels, then we're a long way, allegedly, from reaching the resolution of the human eye. I'm not sure how to get this 576 megapixels thing, because it seems to me that if you print a photograph, I don't know, maybe it comes down to what size you're going to print it at. I don't know. That's a discussion for another day. Need to do some research on that. But yeah, if we then take the assumption that we need 576 megapixels per frame of video, then I'd say we've got a long way to go beyond 8K, Rob, before video allegedly matches the resolution of the human eye. I honestly think that, you know, 20 years from now, we're going to have some sort of display technology that is way beyond anything we can possibly imagine today. It probably won't use the same technology for converting the image from, you know, its digital stored form into its playback form. As you said later in your email about, or it seems the future will be more about inserting precise audio and video data directly into the optical and vestibulocochlear nerves, thus bypassing all external hardware. Mate, very possible. Who knows? Who knows? Or it could get as bad as these arcade pods in Japan. My questions for you... Oh, we've finally got to questions. My questions for you and your audience are... 1. Is audio doomed to be left behind at, quote-unquote, only 22.2 versus the video race? I guess it comes down to what you want your audio to do. No, I don't... you know, again, I will say, as I said a minute ago, 20 years from now, we're probably going to have audio delivery formats that are completely, you know, in the realms of science fiction compared with what we have any concept of today. And, you know, I have no idea what form that audio delivery mechanism will take. But I don't think it will rely on discrete channels the way we think of discrete channels today. I think there will be something far more immersive. You know, I'm sure there are much smarter brains than me working on this stuff right now, but it's probably going to be, you know, well, it's not like an on-off switch. It's just going to be a progressive thing. You know, it's just constantly going to get better. But somewhere down the track, we're going to get it, you know, completely new delivery technologies that just far and away surpass anything we have today. You know, I mean, vinyl was awesome and still is awesome, but it's prone to, you know, surface noise and crackles and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, as I've mentioned, I think I mentioned here since I started sign language again, I've really got into listening to vinyl again in the last 12 months. And it has blown me away just how awesome vinyl sounds. And when you do an A-B comparison between, you know, pick your favorite album from, you know, your teenage years. It doesn't matter what age you are. I'll guarantee if you were to do an A-B comparison between any song from your teenage years off vinyl versus an MP3 that you've ripped off a CD, the vinyl will sound far superior. Yeah, absolutely. I stand by that. It blew me away. I've had a turntable sitting in the cupboard for yonks. Hasn't been used for, you know, probably 15 years. Dug it out 12 months ago, slapped some vinyl on and went, wow, that sounds awesome. Yes, there's surface noise. Yes, I can hear the odd crackle and whatever. But the width and the depth and the just the character of the sound is just amazing compared to MP3. And you would think that as an audio engineer, I would not have allowed myself to be lulled into this, you know, place of complacency, you know, with what I listen to. But the reality is we've all gone there, you know, over the last 15, 20 years, you know, we've listened to more and more compressed and lossy compression at that music. And many of us, the Bill Cameratas of the world, if he's still listening to this podcast, will be sitting there shaking his head sagely, you know, didn't fall into that trap. And I've got to say, you know, for me, it was a rediscovery. And I've started buying new albums on vinyl. And I love it, you know. And the great thing is that a lot of the stuff that's coming out today, you know, new Springsteen albums, you know, obviously, because I'm a massive Springsteen fan, you know, when you buy the vinyl, you generally either get a CD or you get a download voucher for the MP3s anyway. So you get the best of both worlds. You know, you get the portability of MP3s that I can chuck on my phone and take everywhere with me. And then I've got the vinyl for when I'm at home and I really just want to sit right in the sweet spot and enjoy it, you know, and I can put the vinyl on and just be immersed. So, yeah, anyway, I'm sorry if I'm getting sidetracked. So, will audio be doomed to be left behind? No, I don't think so, Rob. I honestly think, you know, that new encoding technologies, you know, in terms of recording and, you know, production techniques that will come along, and new storage mechanisms, new delivery, new playback mechanisms, you know, these things will constantly change and progress over time. And it's just, you know, like I said, it's not going to be a, you know, the past was yesterday and the future is today. It's not going to be like a switch being flicked. It's just going to be a progressive evolution, you know, from one year to the next. Yeah, anyway, question number two. Is cinema truly doomed to disappear or just to be massively upgraded? Mate, I don't know. Cinema certainly went through a bit of a hammering in the 80s, you know, when video first came to the home, you know, and people could buy their Betamax machines and then, you know, the Yanks got in on the game with VHS, you know, and cinema took a hell of a hit, you know, with the advent of video, you know, and you had video stores popping up on every corner, just like that episode of The Simpsons with all the Starbucks, And for a long time, cinema really struggled. You know, they just could not get bums on seats because everyone was just content to go down to the video store and pay $5 and rent a video for the night and take it home and, you know, watch it. Or, you know, stick the video cassette in the machine and then have to rewind it because the last person hadn't rewound it. Then they could watch it. And then they sent it back to the store without rewinding it. You know, but then, you know, cinema realized that they had to move with the times, and through the 90s, you know, cinema, well, certainly in Australia, they invested a lot. They, you know, upgraded a lot of the cinemas. They made the chairs more comfortable. They improved the sound systems, you know, and they jacked the prices up at the candy bar to try and, you know, compensate for all of that money that they'd spent. So, you know, is cinema doomed? Mate, who knows? Like everything, cinema has to move with the times. It's a bit like the record companies. You know, the record companies have been very slow to adapt to the digital age. You know, they resisted, you know, kicking and screaming for years and years and years. but bizarrely they all signed on with Apple and, you know, for the iTunes Music Store. But now they all seem to get it and have slowly started to come round with regards, you know, people want their music digitally. And I think cinema will go through the same sort of thing, you know, as, I don't know. Some people will go overboard with home cinema and other people won't. Some people prefer to just go to the cinema, you know, where you can watch it on a much bigger screen than, you know, 90% of the population are ever going to put into their own home. I mean, certainly TV sizes are getting bigger and bigger and, you're now seeing, 100-inch screens and whatever. I'm not sure how far most people are going to go with that. And just coming back to this whole idea that, 20 years from now, delivery technology is going to be completely different. I think we'll get to a point where you won't have TV screens the way we think of TV screens now. The material out of which the internal walls in your house are built will be display technology, a la the original Arnold Schwarzenegger version of Total Recall. I don't know if you remember the scene in the movie where he's sitting at his breakfast table and looking out over this beautiful vista, and then the wife comes along with the remote and changes, and this whole vista that you thought he was looking out, the side of his house over this beautiful vista, was actually just display technology, and all that changed and the whole wall became his TV display. I think, that is a very real possibility. But, wait and see. Question 3. Who'll win the race? Head-worn VR or massive upgrade to cinema? I don't think either. Like I said, I think it's more likely that, display technology will completely change. But maybe you're talking, shorter term to what I'm talking. I don't think head-worn VR is going to be particularly successful, certainly not in the domestic space, because, not that I'm this kind of guy, but there are lots of guys who love to sit around and watch the footy together, right? It's not a very social experience if, you and your half dozen buddies are sitting around all with VR helmets on, because there's no eye contact, right? It's a bit hard to, laugh and high-five each other when you can't see each other because you've got this stupid VR helmet on. So I personally don't see a massive future for VR. It might take off in the personal gaming space, for those guys that just want to sit by themselves in front of their computer and be immersed in gaming. Yeah, absolutely. I have no doubt it'll take off in that sense, but as a means of viewing TV, no, I don't think so. That's just me. As a side note, these questions also led me to ask myself, what's the pixel resolution of the human? Oh, there you go. Look, you had it in your email. I just hadn't scrolled down far enough. 576 megapixels allegedly. I however think it is too reductive to think of the human eye as something that can be measured with pixels, as I consider pixels a subset of the human eye, similar to measuring stars with candle brightness in the Middle Ages. What is the audio resolution of the human ear? I've not yet found that answer. Most likely it will go by subsets such as this, and he's given me a link to the Wikipedia page on the hearing range. Is human hearing underdeveloped when compared with human sight? Underdeveloped? Interesting. As we evolved as a landmass species, it seems we needed overtly precise visual information to hunt and spot predators, much more so than overtly precise hearing. Which leads me to the sad preliminary conclusion that hearing in humans is not as rich as with other animals. Well, I think we already know that. There are many animals that have much better hearing than us. Surround 22.2 max. Is this why they keep upping the ante with video but not with audio? However, when compared to birds... and he's given me a little graphic which I'm struggling to read because it's so damn small. Anyway, so human sight does not compare, as several wavelengths of the spectrum are invisible to us. I wonder what UV bird porn looks like. Whatever. PS1, in reference to your request of jokes and keeping them coming. Jokes and me and drugs? It's not drugs, sir. My parents were very poor and could not afford formula, so they raised me on double espressos. PS2. I went for lunch with a pair of Mexicans, and they shared these self-deprecating gems, and since I am Mexican-Canadian, I feel no guilt. But thou shall feel very guilty, Mr. Williams. PS3. There are no Mexicans in heaven. Why? They keep deporting them. There are no Mexicans in hell. Why? They keep jumping the border. A building full of Mexicans. What do you call it? Jail. Why do Mexicans always make refried beans? Because they can't get anything right the first time. What do you call an American next to two Mexicans? A cop. What do you call an American next to 10 Mexicans? Border control officer. What do you call an American next to 100 Mexicans? The warden. Why doesn't... Oh, God, this just goes on and on and on. Too many, sorry. And then PS4, there's a picture of a PS4. Thank you, Rob. Okay. So anyway, that was just one email. The second one is much shorter. Rob is worried, is the title. Dear Bruce, I'm not calling you lazy, and I certainly do not claim that writer's block exists for us in audio, because there's no audio fiber for that kind of constipation, right? PS... I suggest you produce something sign, or I am sending you several Lady Kaka songs as audio laxatives, just as a polite warning, reminder. And then he sent me all these really disturbing photos and said, I'm going to start sending you these every week if we don't hurry up and get something from sign language. So here I am, Rob. Thank you for the push. There were a couple of things that I did come across over the last couple of weeks. One was a new document that the guys at iZotope put up on their website, and it's called Mixing with iZotope. And while you may think, well, that's, you know, very iZotope specific, there's actually a lot of really good information in here. Now, I will confess I haven't read the entire document word for word, but I have skimmed through it. Just to give you an idea, from the table of contents, the chapter headings, introduction, what is mixing, the four elements of mixing, EQ, dynamics, panning and stereo imaging, time-based effects, distortion, before starting your mix, mixing an action verb, finishing the mix, summary, tips from the pros, and then Appendix A, getting set up for mixing, and Appendix B, iZotope tools. So yes, there is some iZotope specific information within this PDF, but it looks like there's a lot of really good information in there that, you know, is not necessarily iZotope specific. So if you're a bit of a newbie and, you know, interested in just picking up some new tips from some, you know, professionals who've been there before you, might be worth checking out. It's a PDF file. You can download it. It's about 69, 70 odd pages. So, you know, bunch of good information there. And yeah, throw it on your tablet or your phone or whatever you like, or just read it at your computer. Anyway, check it out. Link will be in the show notes. The other thing that I came across was a thing on the Dolby blog, which was about seven incredible movie sounds and how they were made. Just some interesting stuff regarding how sounds are made for movies. I remember when I caught up with my man in Hollywood. Oh, when was that? That was back in 08. Geez, really? 6 years ago? Bloody hell. You know, he took me into the Foley studio at the particular studio for which he works, which I still can't mention. And just, you know, having him describe, you know, different effects and, you know, sometimes it's the most unusual things that work. They had just, you know, lying on the floor in this Foley studio, a big pile of cassette tape, right? Now, I'm talking audio cassettes like you used to have in your car back in the 80s. So, you know, fairly thin tape, But, you know, like a 90-minute cassette's worth, all just pulled out of the shell and just, you know, a bunch of tape that you could just scrunch in your hands. And he said, you know, when you want the sound of footsteps on grass, this is what we use. And he would scrunch the tape just with his hands. And he said, you know, because actual footsteps on grass don't sound the way we like to think that footsteps on grass should sound, but the scrunching of cassette tape sounds the way we imagine footsteps on grass sound. It was really cool. And there were other things. What did they have? They had a pit of different sizes of gravel. And then some of the gravel was in a pillowcase. And when you trod on the pillowcase, which had, I think it had the really fine gravel in it, and then underneath the pillowcase were slightly larger stones, that gave the sound of crunching snow. Yeah, it was really amazing. So anyway, check out this thing on the Dolby blogs, you know, how these seven different sounds were made from just seven different movies and just one sound from each movie. So anyway, just something interesting to read. Alrighty, I think that will do it. I've probably rambled on long enough. Thank you, Rob, for the crazy emails, as per usual. Love to hear from some other people if there's anyone else out there listening. And I will try to be a little more regular with my delivery of this podcast. But as I have said all along, I'm not going to put out a podcast if I don't think I've got something to say. If there's nothing to say, I'm not going to waste your time. And I figure you'd probably appreciate that more than having me waffle on every week with nothing to say. Okay, so love to hear from you. And until I speak with you next, take care.
Sign language.
Another audiotoyou.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out
signlanguagepodcast.com
or search the iTunes music store for questions, comments, and feedback. Email studio@audiotoyou.com.